And good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the Interoperability Standards Workgroup. I'm Mike Berry, I'm with ONC, and we are always happy that you could be with us. As a reminder, your feedback is welcomed, which could be typed in the chat feature throughout the meeting or could be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at about 11:55 Eastern Time this morning. So let's begin roll call of our workgroup members. And when I call your name, please indicate you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Arianne Malik.
Good morning.
Kelly Aldrich.
Hi, everyone.
Von Futendick.
Good morning.
Thomas Cantalina. Christina Caraballo. Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Ben Eichner.
Good morning.
Adi Gunlapalli or Sanjeev Tandon. Raj Gopartji.
Good morning.
Tim Jurgis. Ken Kamoto. John Kilborn.
Morning.
Leslie Leonard. Sung Liu is going to be absent today. David McCauley.
Good morning.
Glenn McDonald. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber. Abby Sears.
Good morning.
And Ram Sharam.
Good morning.
Good morning to all, and thank you. And please join me in welcoming Stephen and Arianne for their opening remarks.
Well, good morning, everyone. Once again, we are here at what we hope to be our final working group for finalizing recommendations that we'll be sending on to the HITAC now in a week from Thursday. It will still be next month. And so very excited to be here to try to move through these as quickly as possible. We did just hear this morning that our first set of recommendations, our task one recommendations that were presented to HITAC, approved unanimously and transmitted to the national coordinator, have been approved and received by the national coordinator in their entirety and without editing. So those have now been made part of the official public records. You guys can all feel very proud of the work that you're doing and the fact that it is being well received by the folks downstream of us. Arianne, you want to add anything?
No, just to remark as usual that we've made a huge amount of progress to date, but our June meeting is rapidly approaching. We're have to finalize all of these recommendations. We have a lot of work to do today. Let's dive into it.
And just a reminder to members of the public who may be joining us that we welcome your input. You can use the public chat during the course of the meeting. And we have reserved the last 5 minutes of our time for public comment verbally. If there are a number of people who want to make public comments, please raise your hands early on, let us know, and we can move to public comment early as necessary. So we have a number of recommendations that we want to work through today, really essentially cleaning out as much as possible those that people have worked so hard on. As you heard, Dr. Liu cannot join us this morning, but Hans has worked closely with him in the development of finalization of the lab recommendations. We'll be starting whoever's presenting on row 41, item 33A. And Hans.
Just as a reminder, last time we got through the resulting set of recommendations, and now we're starting in on the ordering set of recommendations just to situate people appropriately.
And what I'm going to do again is sort of monkey with the display of the documents so that we can see as much as possible on the screen, so we can have our font size as large as possible. And as soon as you guys can get us to item 33A, I'll get you started, Hans. This is a recommendation. And again, this has to do with lab orders specifically. So a recommendation that ONC, in conjunction with other federal partners, SDOs, and industry partners, create and support a policy framework that encourages, incentivizes, requires, or otherwise enables bi- and multilateral, including public health, closed-loop order to result communication using standards and comprehensive implementation guidance. And I'll just set you up, Hans, by reminding you all that this is not a specific, an ISA specific recommendation. We are not making a comment or suggestion here about either the structure or the content or the process of the ISA itself, but it is certainly related to ISA standards. And our plan is to separate out these related recommendations into a separate section and present them to the HITACH after our ISA specific recommendations. But we all feel, and we've gotten reassurance from the folks at ONC, that this is within our scope, so we will be proceeding in this way.
Or at least scope adjacent. I think the way I'd put this is that, you know, we have the specific task to update the make recommendations for updating the ISA. At the same time, we've noticed that there are elements in the ISA where the standards are fit for purpose, but universal adoption is not yet received, and so those are the areas where we are weeding in to look at specific work that's required to get to, for in this case, end-to-end order to resulting. So
And there we are. Yeah, so yeah. And Wendy, go ahead and increase that size display so that we can see more of it here. Hans.
All right, thank you. And I'll, as Stephen indicated, Hung is not available today, but I will try to do my best to help provide the context behind this and how it fits. As Stephen also indicated on this first one on line 41, it's about the policy. It's not about the guides itself. But as a side note, awareness that both the LRI and LOI are about to go through what is called in ISA 7 a peer review with the latest updates that would also include the latest approaches that were learned from COVID and that were widely distributed as guidance, as well as the work on SOGI in progress. So if we want to provide some a heads up, although ONC already is aware of it, most likely that there are new versions coming out, we could add that as well. But that's not the main focus here. So the first one, very clearly, the closed loop, from ordering to results, to the performance of the result we talked about a little bit before with LIVD enhancing the encoding of the results coming back, because not all devices can have accept LOINC context, not all orders contain LOINC context, is to move forward with that and make sure that it comes back. ELR was called out in the notes there as well. Because LRI is not only about lab results generally, but it's also specifically providing guidance on electronic lab reporting for public health. And if we can do more to help ensure that all parties, not only the sending of the order or the receiving of the result, but everybody in the chain can contribute to that, the policies would be focusing on that entire set, hence the reference to closed loop. And not only on one side of the equation. So I could move forward, but I'll pause for a moment and see whether any questions, comments, or whether
Ike has a question. Go ahead, Ike.
It's not a process question, just a language piece. Maybe we can clarify a little bit the closed loop and multilateral, just to clarify. It's two slightly different purposes with the closed loop applying, but not necessarily the same standard coming back on the multilateral in terms of closing a multilateral, if that makes any sense.
Go ahead, Hans.
Yeah, if I hear correctly, that would mean clarifying more is that it's the order out and the result in is not necessarily the same standard, they're related. Is that what you mean with bilateral and multilateral to explain
it? It may be the same standard, but it is slightly different process. In other words, the closed loop is order to result back to the ordering entity. The multilateral is obviously not based on the order.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
This one was one where we tried to be deliberate in wordsmithing. The intent is that we go from order to result, where that result is returned back to the ordering provider and also provided on to other key actors, most especially including public health. That's the intent of a very shortly but precisely worded statement. Very happy to explore other ways of saying the same thing, but I think it says what we intended to say. If there's a specific wordsmithing that you think would improve the readability, definitely okay. Open to it.
I guess or contrary wise, looking at a multilateral closed loop, I'm trying to envision what that looks like.
I just jotted down a note on the side just for not to be included yet, but I get the sense that multilateral is more that we want to emphasize that all actors, yes. The ordering provider, the lab, et cetera, maybe include some of that terminology so that all actors are engaged to cover the closed loop from order to result and back.
Right. I guess I'm not questioning the idea of multilateral routing. It's more looking at the idea of a closed loop. Usually in this context is a single order backed with the result being sent back to the entity that ordered.
Yeah.
And then multilateral distribution as a secondary or a second component of results reporting.
Okay, cool. So if we modify this to say that it enables closed loop and multilateral distribution, including public health, closed loop result to order communication and multilateral distribution, including public health, let me do some work. Hans, why don't you continue?
Let me do some work on
some wordsmithing and I'll post it to the chat.
I think that's exactly it. It's simultaneous multilateral. It's not that it's a separate process. It's just clarifying what the intent is, which I agree with completely.
Want me to go to the next one then, while?
Yes, please.
Okay, so the next one that's up is now looking more at the same starting of recommendations to ONC, conjunction with federal partners, but to really focus on the common, most important orderable tests and panels for each order type, including the orders that link to prioritized results. A lot of work has already happened, but to make sure that continues so that the library of standard vocabulary is expanding and is more widely used. So not only that it exists, but that it also is used in that closed loop through all the different steps where it becomes relevant. So examples that are listed below, harmonization, advancement, consensus of standard-based catalogs, the laboratory and radiology tests using, for example, Lorent Universal Lab Orders. In that sense, it also goes beyond LRI and LOI in that radiology tests are not covered under LRI and LOI, but they are covered here. So we need to keep that in mind as well, that this is extending across any kind of orders effectively, not just lab. When the custom panels, non-panel Lorent codes for the individual tests can be used to have them available, and that mapping can be provided there as well, which ties back to some of the other things. We talked about before about lab order details, frequency, priority, timing, that they are addressed as well. And for order radiology orders and order details, such as imaging modalities, anatomic location, et cetera, that those data elements are part of it as well. Again, just to clarify that the radiology orders are not covered under LRI, LOI. They would be currently addressed effectively in anybody's interpretation of version 2, some IHE standards that are available. So that's a much bigger mixed bag at this point in time.
So Hans, I will just make a friendly amendment here. We've been discussing this in various settings for a number of years now, and it goes beyond lab and radiology, of course. So I think this need for identifying the most common and important orderables and results and supporting those at a national level through a prioritization schema is really important. So I would just make this one suggestion, if that's okay with you.
No concerns here.
All right. Arian, do you want to back
it
up?
A, David has a question first, and then maybe we can back up on the language and just see if we have consent in the language.
On the sort of what I would have called a standardized order catalog, the 33B, do we have some notion of what the point of it would be? Is it just that there would be some unstated incentive to use it as opposed to what you're currently using?
I mean, I can answer that when this came up, and David, I think you were there in our interoperability standards work group task force some years back, where we were dealing with the challenge of mapping and the fact that we needed for these orders and results to move effectively between ordering provider, resulting agency, downstream users, that we really needed everyone to be on the same page. And if we could identify the top 20, top 100, top 500, orders, and everyone could do whatever mapping, testing, et cetera, to make sure that those worked well, that got us a long way down the line, with the traditional 80-20 rule. So that is the purpose here, is to identify those priority, the glycohemoglobin, the INR, the PSA, you name it, the chest CT scan for the lung cancer screening. There are commonly used tests that are utilized for population health management, for health maintenance, for quality reporting, et cetera. And the idea was to capture those.
The answer to David's question is yes. The intent is to create a standard catalog of order rules.
Yeah, and I've obviously pushed for that for more than a decade. I'm just now wondering, what the impact of it is. Who's going to make it happen? Why would they make it happen?
Look at 33D. Look at 33D in terms of the recommendations. Look at 33C. So 33D and 33C really get at the cool. And also, if we could have have ONC work on a policy framework that includes submission of self-developed tests for assignment of standard codes and assure the harmonization of multiple existing code sets for orderable tests, it would be that's really where we get at actually using the orderable catalog. But in general, the framework would be, hey, let's make sure that we've got the standards for order to result to public health and to ordering provider, as well as to referring providers, et cetera. Let's make sure that in the order, we have a standard orderables catalog that can be used. And then it would be pretty cool if the receiving labs could actually receive the orderables catalog. But yes, you need, this is why it's a complex space, because you actually need multiple actors to collaborate on multiple elements of the standard space.
Yeah. So the problem is always, as been not that we didn't know what are common orders, but that there was no reason to change your order catalog to map to the common order catalog.
Yeah. In the same way that there's no reason to use LRI or
LOI. There were specific incentives for those two that have topped out. So that's kind of what I'm getting at, is what's the incentive? But anyway, you've answered the question that you've got additional recommendations that are pushing in that direction.
And that sounds good. And we've been asked by ONC to be careful about how we articulate specific incentives. I think there is a policy framework that ONC could put together with other federal actors that would create a meaningful policy framework that encourages adoption. But we've been asked not to weigh into the policy programmatics.
And on that note, though, Arian, is that would it still fit in light of the other place that we indicated here, encourages, incentivizes, et cetera? We use those terms to also indicate that ONC looks at approaches on how to encourage, incentivize the adoption of it, because just creating the catalog does not necessarily mean.
Should we say prioritize and adopt?
Correct.
Yeah. Let me do this. Let me do the same thing of offline magic on wordsmithing.
Because I think the intended goal is that where there is communication across parties, that rather than it only including a local code, that it already would include, in addition to or just, depending on the circumstances, the LOINC or SNOMET or whatever the appropriate code is for the test or the result value or whatever, that it already includes that where as much as possible. Doesn't mean that locally you could still do some mapping where it's not available, but what would it take to not only have the catalog, but also that it's being consistently used increasingly.
So let's scroll up back up to 33A. I'd like to finalize these as we go. I've captured the text that Arian suggested, just separating the bilateral closed loop order to result communication and the multilateral distribution. Any questions, concerns about that new language?
Perhaps is to on the multilateral distribution of the results, maybe to just make that explicit.
Perfect. Got it. Any hands up? Any comments? Want to acknowledge the number of you who came a little late and introduced yourselves in the chat. Thank you for that. All right. If there's no objection, we will consider this one to be completed. And 33B, similarly, we discussed that. Any questions or concerns with that one?
Purple.
I think, Karen, you were still trying to prioritize and adopt.
Yeah, prioritize or incent the adoption of the most common.
I think there was still that wordsmith going on.
So I'll take care of
popping that in.
Yeah.
Okay, good. But otherwise, we'll consider 33B acceptable to the group. Great. Turn it purple when you're done. 33C, we made mention of. This was incentivizing laboratories to submit self-developed tests to LOINC for assignment of standard codes. This is kind of part of the puzzle that will make this work. Any questions or concerns on that one? 33D also mentioned in this David, case. Yes, David.
On 33C, the IVD developers submit their tests to FDA and then indirectly to Shield. Is LOINC the right target for this?
The IVD tests are being mapped, or guidance for most appropriate mapping based on conduct is provided by the manufacturer as to what LOINC code for the tests and what LOINC or SNOMET codes for the result values that they generate.
Yeah, so we already have recommendations up in 32 on the sort of LIVID IVD mapping process. This is for the order and making sure that self-developed tests have an orderable code that's mapped into LOINC.
Well, then you should clarify that, because a self-developed test sounds like an IVD to me. I mean, if by that you mean somebody doing some chemistry to get a result.
Yeah, it's not different regulatory schemes, unfortunately. So we have a set of regulatory schemes that are under FDA for mass developed IVDs, and then a different regulatory scheme for self-developed tests.
Do we want to clarify to make sure?
But I think we should. I think we should assignment of standard orderable codes.
Yeah,
I'll make the edit.
All right.
But would it also help to say is that this is not about manufacturer IVD tests, because they are all
I'm not concerned about that so much as just are we channeling the same advice in completely different directions, and it's the clarification is this is about the orderable side. And that helps.
Good. Okay. I will make it purple.
Arian, in the other cases, I think we have to use the term test codes instead of plural. But
this is real fast. Don't you also want the same LOINC code to be used on a result that's provided?
Yeah, we already cover that one above.
Okay.
Display, please scroll up to 33B. just so that we can clarify the language that was added in response to comments. Any concerns about the final language?
I would put incentivize rather than incense in the second line. Just underneath partners.
Okay. Keep our incentivize.
Sorry, in 33 being.
I got it. All right, good, done. And 33C, we've got a little bit of a language change there. Anyone have any concerns with that? Steve, your hand is still up.
No,
there's perhaps one comment, but this might cutting it a little bit too fine. Not all tests are orderable. They are indirectly being performed, but not necessarily orderable. I'm just wondering that by having the term orderable in here, that we are effectively aiming at too small of a set of test codes. Test codes would be all, orderable would be a subset. And I think we want them all.
So standard
test codes.
Test codes, all right.
Because the orderable is a subset of it.
Aaron, I think you're in there.
Are you okay, Aaron, with that?
I did it already.
Okay.
You want to turn it purple for us?
I will turn it purple.
Terrific. All right. Next up, 33D.
So in 33D, harmonization of multiple existing code sets for all the portable tests. It references SNOMATS, CPT, HCPCS, across the different areas of whether you're in a clinical or in a administrative financial, shifting around between code sets, and as a result, that can get confusing. They're not necessarily at the same level of granularity. So the intent here is to encourage that as much and wherever possible that is aligned, so that we have one consistent set wherever possible. That is in itself probably a very large discussion based on some areas where perhaps there is more granularity needed for one purpose or another, but the more it's aligned, the sense is that, and believe is that, that would also enhance clarity, consistency, reduce the documentation burden by having to know different kinds, et cetera. So trying to get to a more common set rather than multiple.
And really identifying LOINC as the hub here, the idealized hub for this work at this time. John Kilbourn.
I think the more we can specify or crispify the purpose of this, the better, because harmonize means like a 10-year long discussion of things that doesn't always end up landing somewhere. I mean, I'm being a little facetious there, but if the more we can kind of focus what we want to have happen, we want these test scheme code schemes to do what? To come together, to people to use a common set. Like, I'm not clear, maybe I'm the only one, but I don't really know what we mean by harmonize in this context. And I've been at a lot of harmonizing discussions in the last, 10 or 15 years. So the more we can specify what we mean, I don't really know what we mean here. And maybe somebody else might not know exactly what we're trying to accomplish by harmonizing.
These aren't radically different worlds like the DoD and the VA. Sorry, that was a really bad joke.
I'm with you there. Yeah.
I agree. So Hans, I think the intent is we should be using LOINC, right, for orderables.
Yep.
Yeah. So should we say? I think John's got exactly the right point. Should we say we should be using LOINC?
And I think we can make that explicit.
Okay. Yep.
That's our aim. There's one set that's used, and from there everything is derived and pulled. And
standardization of orderable test code sets to LOINC.
But I think it's a cross mapping, maybe, is the word you're looking for. Instead of
I don't think so. So I'll let Hans comment. But I think right now for orderables, there are some people who, given the same set of information, pick a LOINC catalog. It's probably the most common. Some people pick CPT for reasonable reasons. And then there's other folks who sort of long tail off the list who pick a different terminology set for orderable catalog. And I think what we're saying is, darn it, just use LOINC as the orderable catalog. Hans, do you?
Yeah, and but I still think there's one of the part that that Dave mentioned, there is a part of cross mapping and there is a part of alignment on a singular one, in that they probably are both happening at the same time, because it's even if we arrive at LOINC is the set, those other code sets might still be appropriate to be used, and that's what we need cross mapping for. Or we are not fully there yet, and we need cross mapping. So I would agree with David that there are two elements to it: cross mapping and alignment on a single and getting us to a singular set for orderable. That doesn't mean that there might not be purposes for other sets for other purposes.
Yeah, I mean, people use HCPCS and CPT for very specific reasons. They like to get paid. They're not going to just switch to LOINC unless that continues to happen. So that's why I'm saying at a minimum, it's a cross map. If you force them to use LOINC, they need to be able to go back and say, what's that equivalent CPT or HCPCS?
So I would say a clarification that indicates that it's both. We're aiming for LOINC, and we need cross mapping to get there, and to keep a connection with the other code sets as well, but we still need them.
How about that?
I like that. David says yes.
Yep.
But let's let it be, and we will turn it purple.
And I want to remind people that this is really down in the weeds work that has been, people have been trying to clarify these recommendations for years. And of course, the environment in which we're functioning is changing. I got to tell you, those of you who are uninitiated, if Hans and Arian and David agree on something, it is almost certainly spot on. So I've come to learn this. I did add a policy level. Thank you, Sylvia, for that up in 43J regarding our recommendation 33C. All right, shall we go on to recommendation 34?
Yep. Let's see. We have talked so far about the provider, the clinician perspective, and the closed loop there to order and result on the test. This one is shifting the focus to the patient. And to get to a point where we have names of tests and results values and otherwise that are easy to understand, patient-friendly as well, so that these items are being displayed, used elsewhere in consumer-focused communication, apps, portals, et cetera, that they become easier, better to understand and to work with for the consumers. So that's the focus of this one, to say is that don't only focus on what is appropriate for clinicians, providers. We also need to work on what is appropriate and friendly towards the patient. So order and this result display names for patients.
Hans and Stephen, I think this work is in process. Originally referenced a larger piece of context that when we dereference the links turned out not to be in progress. Should we just delete that sentence?
That's fine. Yeah, I think there is, I believe there's still some work going on this, but the key really is to keep this moving.
Is there a document, even if it's a small set, that is actually already in play that the ISA should reference as a work in progress that we should add?
So Hung had a link to an organization that was looking at patient friendly display names, but when I dereferenced the link, it didn't exist. It was it had moved on.
So,
which is telling.
Steve, Ike,
just a minor wordsmith. I think probably distinguishing, looking at using display names and displaying the names for patients could probably be reworded just really quickly. I can take a shot at it online.
Sure. If you think there's clearer language, take a shot at it, put it in red, and we'll come back. Hans, any other hands up, David? Your hands up?
Yeah, just a little bit of, there's a certain complexity that can't be elided away by a friendly name. And I would consider that something's more valuable would be a standard explanation with a link. I mean, it's not to say that friendly naming isn't important, but the stuff is complicated. And
that is a bigger kettle of fish. And there are a number of third-party vendors that have, you know, tried to develop some clarification on lab and other testing. I certainly point my patients to various references at different times. I don't know that that's something that we're going to necessarily be able to tackle nationally, but it is an interesting point.
Is there an opportunity, is that, for example, as part of certification, there has been the info button capability that was used to point to different knowledge sources. And it did not try to establish any particular one, but there was the ability to then reach out to that in a more standard fashion.
I'm gonna request that, in this area that we stay pretty firmly in our lane. So maybe the call here is for names and explanatory comment, or again, is that just straying too far?
Well, that was certainly what I was thinking, names and explanatory comments or links to explanatory comments or something. But I understand, Stephen, the point that the scope of that gets way big. But, you know, somebody coming up with a simple, friendly name to explain some incredibly complex antigen test, you're going to be in explaining mode pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But perhaps it's that if we indicate an ability to link to, so on David's example.
There you go. That's good. I mean, that's an implementation thing, but that captures what I'm worried about, is that the name itself isn't sufficient. So don't spend a ton of money getting friendly names and then discover you still have no idea what the test means.
All right. Who's in that cell at the moment?
I'm not.
Arian is. Arian, do you want to add that?
Sure. So what we're asking for is display names and content links.
The ability to link to explanatory content.
And I did find the page on LOINC talking about the consumer names, which is where I got that phrase. And we used to refer to these as patient-friendly names, and they added that terminology. We could reference that when I said this work is in progress, but as we learned, that there really wasn't a lot of work being done on that at the moment.
So I'm actually struggling with where to put this, and make the sentence actually read. So without a lot of surgery, patient friendly. Anyway, if somebody can help me, I would greatly appreciate it, because I don't think it's an easy add.
I can come back after the last one and then go back to give it a whirl if you want to.
All right, let's do the last one, Hans, because that was yours originally.
So the last one is a bridge between the ordering results on the lab side and the case reporting on the other side, where we see increasing overlap, that some data is being added to ELR that perhaps could be part, and in a number of cases could or should be part of case reporting. So this is indicating is that ONC with other federal partners, and particularly CDC public health jurisdictions, to revisit the variety of requirements that are being put on ELR and find a better balance with the use of ECR to enhance and right-size those data flows. That's the intent behind that.
So basically skinnying down ELR, because ECR should carry the water for some of these data.
Correct. Keep it focused on its intent, and then let ECR pick up the rest of the context that it needs to convey.
As an editorial comment, I think we've heard from public health that when ECR is broadly deployed, public health often gets the case report via ECR faster than it gets the actual lab result.
Yeah. clearly ECRs are not required in all circumstances necessarily when there's a lab result, but many, but we can look at that as well to really get an improved data flow there and the appropriate size of the data set that is needed.
Any questions on that one? And Arian, I also tried to little wordsmith on 34 and couldn't figure out how to fit in David's novel idea. So I don't know, David, I think we may need to come back at that one because I think it just muddies this water a bit.
This is Steve. I think looking at line 35, relevant, I do mean to the performance of the laboratory test or the results of the laboratory test. In other words, I'm concerned more about the results than whether than the performance metrics around the test.
Yeah, I think what Hans is saying is that in some cases, ELR is overloaded with a case reporting function. And if we, in a world where we have broader adoption of ECR, we can lean more heavily on ECR as the case reporting function and keep ELR focused on providing public health the relevant result data.
Right. I thoroughly understand that.
Yep.
I was just going to get the word performance. In other words, looking at the goal here is the test results reporting, not the performance, not the statistical factors relating to, oh, the laboratory test unto itself. Does that make sense? In other words,
oh, when you say not relevant to the performance of the laboratory test, you're looking at that, at the word performance there.
Right.
Okay.
Wholeheartedly agree that the focus is on results and then.
Got it. So you would move the word performance to resulting.
Right.
Got it. Okay. Any objection?
Nope.
All right. Any further thoughts on either 34 or 35?
I like the change on 34, David.
Thank you, David. Not sure who made the bulk of that change, but it's lovely. All right, let's consider both of those finalized, if we can. I don't know if I'm in there. All right, and then let's also move on. So thank you for that, Hans, for taking us through that. Next up on our agenda is SDOH standards, CDC race, ethnicity vocabulary subset per mark.
Easy and, for you to say, Stephen.
Yeah, right. And I think we're going back up to the top of the document. And it's number 7.
Ready for me to go?
Please.
Go for it.
Okay. So I added a little bit over the weekend just for background that you've already, that the work group has already heard. The federal, background and observations, the federal preference for self-reporting, self-identification of race and ethnicity with a link to the standards policy back from 1997. The observations that it, despite the preference, it often doesn't happen that way. And hence the Gravity Project made the recommendation to add to ISA some work that the Gravity Project is doing. It is draft in STU2 for the implementation guide to identify the source and method of collecting the value for race and to identify the source and method of collecting the value for ethnicity. So I've pasted the recommendation from the Gravity Project presentation succinct right there on the column F about how to amend the ISA to include those things, with a note that while we were charged with looking at this for race and ethnicity, the this point about including source and method would be applicable to some other self-reported personal characteristics as well. And indeed, the Gravity Project is testing it for some other personal characteristics beyond race and ethnicity, if that's helpful.
So I'm confused when we're thinking about the ISA, what standard or implementation guidance we're pointing to. Is this about making sure that in communication of race or ethnicity data via an ADT, for example, that those standards be updated to include, or the implementation guidance for those standards be updated to include the source in all cases? Is that the general? I'm having a hard time taking this recommendation and mapping it to the charge of the ISA update.
Okay, so I think at a conceptual level, we are noting the importance, and that's the that's sort of the outline format there, and then the link that goes underneath that for ISA would be at the least STU2, which is invalid and close to being finished, where the approach for that is being laid out, and that can be a reference standard.
STU2.
Does that answer your question, Arian?
Yeah, STU2 of what?
Of the SDOH Clinical Care Implementation Guide. STU1 is already in, it's a part of the SDOH data elements that are in USCDI version 2. So we're now going through a second iteration of that ballot, and a part of that STU2 includes
fire
a draft a specification.
A
yes.
Yeah. This is a fire implementation guide.
Correct.
Okay. Got it. So we probably want to name in this recommendation the fire IG. And then Hans, how does this sit relative to the general comment that we need to update consolidated CDA and fire US core and yada and you know other standards to this feels like a specific instance of a general problem of updating the implementation guidance to USCDI V2 and V3.
The three areas within HL7 where this plays is that it would be SOG data, so it would be more than race and ethnicity. And race and ethnicity have been addressed more already in the three guides. It's more the SOG that is not fully agreed to yet on how to best communicate that in the different areas. So in that sense, I think they can coexist next to each other. But once you start to go to note, then you get more into the SOG part that the current updates are looking at. So I would keep them separate in a way, because if you just look at which ones still need standards update more and which ones need more attention in the way outlined here.
Okay, so can I ask you to go back with this recommendation and put in the pointers to the fire content, and then you know, anytime we're talking about fire, we're you know, are we doing the same thing for consolidated CDA? Are we doing the same thing for ADT guides? But if we have more specific recommendations here in terms of IGs, I think it would be better to name them.
And those would go into the recommendation itself, correct?
Yeah,
those are going to the recommendation itself. Yep.
Abby, your hands up.
Yeah, I just was curious, Mark, what is the thinking about I'd like to better understand why we're looking for the information on the source and the method. The reason I'm asking is I'm just in my head both managing the additional information and the work required to actually get that information and how accurate it will actually be if we do get it.
So what I'm told in sort of the column of identifying reports from the field is that there will be a significant number of instances where you don't know from what's in the EHR, whether it is self-reported, whether it's a clinical observation, whether it's from a batch file, and that is significant information to know whether the individual was the source of it and how was that collected.
Did they give you any idea why that mattered so much?
No. The people that I was talking to in internal to clinical settings, I did not ask them that question. I know from my own work that, and for example, the federal standard, which specifies the preference for self-reporting, that it is important to know that And it's important to people who go into the clinical setting and say, but wait, you have this for me, and that's not true. One example that was given to me was a person from the Dominican Republic being classified, I forget which way I got this, whether being classified as African-American instead of Latino or the other way around. And with his particular health issues, having some significant implications for the algorithms for hypertension. Mm-hmm. So it actually has clinical implications as well to make sure that you get that right. It also, that also connects to what we've been talking about, the patient's ability to correct errors in the medical records in order to preserve patient safety and better care.
Are you okay with that, Abby?
Oh, I don't know. It's a, I mean, sure. I just think about the complexity of collecting that and the complexity of adding that level of information. I don't think there's anything bad with it. It's probably really good. I'm just concerned about whether it'll really happen and what that looks like in the workflow of collecting it. But I don't have any, it's probably good to have it in the standards and to talk about it so that if people can collect it and do it well, we have a good way of actually standardizing it.
Actually, I think you're channeling Clem, who had to leave us early, that, you know, the notion of trying to avoid the added burden of data collection on end users. And it's certainly as important for the folks who are capturing this data as it is for those capturing clinical data. So I think the adding a comment that this is, you know, that it should be exchanged if known, but that this adding this to the standard does not introduce a requirement to collect this. Mm-hmm. So Mark, you're going to work on this wording a little bit, it sounds like, and then we'll scroll back to you.
Yes.
Make changes in red if you can. Hans, your hand is still up.
I put in the a note in the chat, and I think that was received by Aaron. So I think we said.
Perfect.
Oh, on the word again.
All right, great. All right, let's scroll down to item 10 and go through that as quickly as we can. Steve Eichner, I assume that was you who was adding alternative language in this recommendation. I incorporated those recommendations. So this is a recommendation, again, that we've talked about in other task forces before. It is not an ISA-specific recommendation, so it would be outside of that, but certainly adjacent to our work, recommending that ONC in coordination, explore the development of a certification program and associated funding to facilitate compliance for public health information systems to establish minimum technical and functional standards in support of bidirectional health data interoperability with exchange partners, including providers and individuals. So this is, go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, I wonder whether in light of where we sit, whether we want instead or in addition to recommend that the ISA be updated to, I think this is consistent with our other recommendations on priority use cases or use cases, that the ISA be updated to include the definitive set of public health standards that could be used in policy and programmatics.
This is Steve. I think you can do that at the national level, but I'm not sure you can do that at the state level. There may be other reporting requirements that are state specific.
No doubt. States will be salts will be stilts will be stilts. I'm thinking about ONC's request to us to be wherever possible responsive to the ISA update. And it feels like at least one thing that we could do that is in line with our ISA update is to make recommendations on pulling in the ISA a common subset of public health standards applicable both to, you know, reporting systems like EHRs and public health data systems.
Very much agreed. And I think it's a secondary component. Here, it's great to have adopted standards One of the things that we've noticed after working with a variety of providers over a variety of years on ELR, ECR, laboratory, you know, on down the line, is that sometimes when, although the technology itself may be certified, one of the things that seems to happen after market is providers then do some localized changes to their information systems, like, or things like adding additional fields that may be replicating an existing standardized field. And then it results in the standardized messages not being complete or accurate from a semantic and a syntactic perspective. So that's, it affects public health certification as well in an indirect way.
We've lost it.
We can be ready, David, to catch full.
Well, we get, Mike Workson's audio. Or maybe
it's actually, Arian, it's your audio.
Me, we're hearing. I got it.
Okay.
But it's great to be able to catch the ball, and that's fantastic. If somehow the ball gets altered in flight, it creates a problem.
So, Arian, I don't know if you're coming and going. Oh, there you are. You're moving. So I just, I tried to, or Arian, I tried to capture what you were just saying. Does that get at it?
Let me just move my screen around. Yes.
David, your hand is up.
Yeah, I think I sort of answered what my question was, which is basically what problem are we trying to solve with a expensive and complicated certification program? And I guess the corollary is that the best way to solve said problem? I mean, you know, Ike lives in that world and I don't, but certification programs are big and complicated and expensive.
David, I think the problem that we're trying to solve is the one that we faced in meaningful use stage two, which is that we had a lot of EHRs that were adopting common standards for public health data without the state means or the stilt means to accept the data using the standards provided.
So Arian, that's a good point. Let me then put a notion out that instead of certifying, well, maybe we would want to talk about certification of their APIs or their interfaces. In other words, a testing, a workbench, like you can demonstrate that you successfully handle ECR submissions that are properly formatted, et cetera. Right, it's really the APIs that we want to certify.
Thank you for that. And the other piece of that one, as I said earlier, is it's great to be able to catch a message that's meeting the certification standards, but if it's not being sent with accurate and complete data in a semantic manner, that also creates a problem. One of the things we found looking back at stage two was, while a cancer message, as an example, frequently met the structure requirements that we expected, the way that the message was populated did not result in useful information being submitted. It was not really public health's inability to catch a certified message. It was the content of the message, once it was in production, in many cases, not all, that the content was not useful. So a secondary piece probably needs to be on the actual transmission of a message in a production environment, not just on the test bed. Same thing on receiving it too, for that matter. I mean, it could work in bench, but if public health does a bunch of modification once we get it turned over from the vendor and we mess stuff up on our side, that's a problem as well. It's not in any single player's court.
So that's more of a real world data assessment than what I think certification typically means. Certifications are static. It's just, it's a big complicated space, and I certainly think public health could benefit from improvements of interoperability, but I don't know that we're capturing a recommendation here that has much chance of being implemented.
I think there are folks who have talked about, well, there's a broader set of play, you know, funding mechanisms and other things at play that could be that would accompany the requirement with the funding. Hans, you've got your hand up.
The way I'm understanding the ISA, that already has effectively, by referencing the different standards, all the minimum data elements inside those standards, whether they are APIs, messaging, documents, whatever, they're effectively already there at a much more granular data level than we would see in the USCDI, which is fine. Because in the standards, you actually see what is really needed in order to do interoperability. And USCDI is more a general library of concepts and general data elements. So I'm not convinced about the first one being needed because that's already there. The question is, what is it in addition to that? Are there use cases missing that need to be covered because those are not yet in play? And then from the ISA, it can go into certification or not. Certification, I think we need to keep separate from ISA. Not necessarily everything in ISA needs to be certified.
That's right. So Hans, let me ask the first bullet question this way. Is it currently possible in the ISA to look at the comprehensive set of public health standards and implementation guides that are the latest and greatest and the most reasonable to adopt in order to achieve public health data interoperability?
When you go to the ISA listing, I'm trying to see whether I can get the link in the chat. There is a section on public health. Now, we might disagree, but it's complete, which is fine. Then we can add the ones that are not there. I think that most of them are up to date, but there are a couple of them that are probably not. But that's the place where everything should be. And I'm still navigating.
Yeah, still navigating. And I guess
one of the other differences in large part between public health's typical approach for information systems and EHRs is that many EHRs or many public health information systems are very much more segregated or separated than a single integrated application. That we've got a separate system for immunization reporting and a separate system for disease investigation. They may share a common interface as a third-party standard tool as an interface engine, but the background systems may be very different. And a lot of them, particularly for larger organizations, are really customized solutions. They might have started with a core commercial off-the-shelf system, but are rapidly so highly customized as you're really looking at an individual certification, if you're looking at functional certification. Now, there's been some work done on voluntary certification, particularly around immunization reporting and the work that ERA has done. And that's been, I think, largely successful and commendable as an example of things that have worked.
Ike, I'm going to break in here. I just realized that I took us off topic and off of our schedule. This was a non-prioritized item that I inadvertently raised because I was just working on my way down the list. I think we need to shelf this one for now and go back to our agenda to get through our prioritized items. I sincerely apologize. We were supposed to go to communications and referrals between providers and community-based social care providers, which is lower down in the list. I apologize for that. Is that okay, Ariane, as co-chair? Are you with me?
We can't hear you.
If you can hear me, I'm good.
Okay, good. I wanted to apologize. We were trying to go in an order here. So the next one was, and we didn't end up having that in the list. Let me see, where is it? It was number 21. is what it is. And the recommendation is that ONC track in the ISA standards and implementation guides needed to support the use case of bidirectional communications and closed loop referrals between community-based social service providers and other healthcare stakeholders, including individuals, patients, clinicians, payers, and public health. And we work group prioritized that highly, and therefore I wanted us to get through that. David.
I obviously like the spirit of this. I'm just, I'm thinking about the notion of bidirectional communication sounds like peer-to-peer rather than a shared chat or discussion. I don't think that's necessarily what you intended. In other words, it seems to me it's not a problem for direct to solve, although that may play a role, obviously. It's the need for some way to have almost a scratch pad of communication around management of a case that allows everybody to participate in the discussion.
I think that's very similar to Mark's earlier recommendation around the shared care plan. This does not get so specific so much as to focus, keep a focus on the use case. But yes, it's bidirectional communications and closed loop referrals.
This is Steve Eitner.
Steve, go ahead and use the hand raising feature just so we can make sure that we're getting everybody in order. Hans, your hand was up next.
Just a quick question is that in the ISA, there is already the closed loop referrals. There is also the gravity, and I'm pretty sure that Beezer was in there as well. So I'm trying to understand what is the additional thing that we feel is missing, because this sounds like a very general, which I'm no disagreement with, but I'm trying to understand what is it that we believe is missing that needs to be added, because some of these.
I was trying to find it. I went to the content structure care coordination for referral, and then you've got referral for acute care. Is this referral to extra clinical services?
BSER.
Yeah. So I think. I think Hans is right that the answer
that it's already there. Terrific. If that's the case and we feel comfortable, sorry, you want to throw your comment in here now?
Sure, sorry about that. I was just going to suggest that it start with the referral is likely to start with the healthcare provider, and the way that it's currently worded and the way it's usually interpreted, the referral would start with the social service provider, the way that's worded right now.
Yeah, it actually can go either way, right? A social service provider can identify the need for healthcare or other services and vice versa. This was not meant to be directional.
Hans, can you look at the, am I looking at this right? Referral to extra clinical services, which I find a confusing name.
Yeah, I got the same reaction. I was just typing in the chat is that if that would have been called community-based
organizations and other extra clinical services, it would be actually clearer.
And then gravity should be listed there as well in that context, because gravity is addressing a variety of social services, SDOH related otherwise, and Beezer is addressing more community, and there's some discussions going on alignment between those two, but that's where it would fit.
Okay, so Stephen, maybe we reword this recommendation to say, recommend that the ISA clarify the language to include referral to CBOs as a use case and track gravity standards in addition to the standards currently listed.
Yep.
All right. Let me simply make some notes here so we can come back to that. The challenge in any coming back at this point is having the time to come back insofar as this is our last day. So
I will take the mission of making the suggested edit, and we can loop back in line if we've got time, which we do.
Great. Okay, super. Then next up on the agenda is fire endpoints from David McCallie, which is just the next one down. 24, I believe. Yes, 24.
Yeah, so there's a set of several items here that are somewhat related. I did a email survey of colleagues that are still actively working on various consumer access projects and asked them for areas that they thought should be in the ISA that might not be there. And so that's where this several sort of focused areas come from. The starting point is this notion of a fire endpoint standard so that consumers can quickly identify the API address for their data. Hans, I'll ask you, I think you said that this was already being tracked in an accelerator, in which case this may be redundant to specifically talk about it here.
Yeah, the combination of things there. FAST is the has moved from an ONC sponsored initiative to a fire accelerator, and that's where directories are a key element for that infrastructure that are in play. The other part is that as part of certification that has its the current phase, its deadline by the end of this year, not precisely, but in the next couple of months, is that endpoint listings are becoming a requirement to be certified to certain fire APIs. So there are a number of things that are already addressed. The question is that what is are we looking at a particular aspect of it that that we need to clarify more?
Yeah, I don't have anything specific other than that broad notion that it's a problem that needs to be solved. It may be, Stephen, that we can just drop this one because I think we've made the broad connection to the accelerators. And certainly ONC is well aware of FAST and that they got it started.
Yeah. So are you saying 22 through 24?
No, 24 in specific.
24 in particular. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And 23 are specific use cases that are not currently covered.
Okay. And those are lower priorities. So we'll come back to those. So we're withdrawing 24.
Yes. I'm happy. I'm okay with that because I think it's covered elsewhere.
All right.
May I make one consideration around that? Is that the challenge probably with the endpoints is perhaps not as much the technology part of it, but there is the need for vendors to publish endpoints. There is NPAS, but are endpoints being enabled and accessible in all the natural places like networks or otherwise providers that that it's depending on your use case, it's easier to go in nationally, it's easier to go into by vendor, it's easier to go in by provider, it's easier to go in by network. That's kind of aspect of network endpoint libraries and directories is not yet at an optimum point.
Yeah, I think clearly there's a technical problem that's fairly straightforward. How do you capture and represent right. the sufficient information? That's step one. And step two, the much harder is what's the business case for managing and maintaining these directories? But I don't think that's in our scope here.
So we are going to withdraw this one?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I think it's covered elsewhere.
Okay.
All right.
I made the edit to 21 if we want to look at it.
Good. Let's go back there. You made the edit. Where did you make it?
In the recommendation.
Okay. Recommend that ONC update the use case label from the current referral to extracurricular services to referral to community-based organizations and other extracurricular services in the ISA and track gravity. Oh, love it.
Okay.
Anyone have any thoughts on that one?
Love it.
Okay. Okay. Mark, you did an update up above.
Yes. Item 7.
Okay. Item 7. Let's go back there.
It's a blend of what was said on the call with what I observed in the chat. So I hope I got it correct. The reference to ADT seemed to be, there were some chat conversation about that.
Yeah, so, so Hans and I were going back and forth on the general topic that as we go from US CDI V1 to V2 and V3, there is work to update the US core standards for consolidated CDA and FHIR, but we're noting that you also need to do the same modifications for V2, NCPDP, and other standards that are non-CDA and FHIR. So it's a cross-cutting. Our comments were more of a cross-cutting comment. But specifically,
so Stephen, I think the use of the word include there opens up to anything else that might come in, and it just says, for example.
All right. Is this feeling comfortable to folks? Number 7. All right. Let's go ahead and finalize that. And next up on our agenda is non-prioritized ISA topics. So this was, David, you have 2 of these. This is the use cases you were mentioning, downloading DICOM images and genomic variant data. So that was back to numbers 22 and 23, correct?
Yeah. So the problem being solved here is that the existing API, FHIR APIs, often fail when you are going for data that is not directly managed by the EHR, as is often the case with images, which typically are managed in separate systems. So work was done in the Sync for Science program with Josh Mandel's team to come up with a standard for allowing the EHR to transfer the request to the PACS system containing the consumer's authorization for access to the record in a technically clean and secure way. To my searching, I couldn't find that use case being tracked anywhere. So the proposal here is simply to add this use case to the ISA. And in the case of this one in particular, I think there's a link could be made to the Sync for Science proposal that's out on GitHub. I had that in the original spreadsheet, but I see the link is gone now. So
No, I may just be hiding the column. Sorry.
It's okay. I mean, I don't think we have to solve that. It's just notion that this is a use case that needs to be tracked. There's nothing.
You do have that link over there in the background. Yeah. So
good. And then on 23, it's essentially the same concept that there's no easy way to get and download your genetic variant data if you've had a whole genome or whole exome study done. And the person who recommended that we track this said that there's some early work in HL7's genomics group on FHIR extensions to do this, but it hasn't been tracked at this point. So this is, you know, the notion that you get a whole exome study and you want to look at that data on your own, submit it to other services for evaluation. There's no good standard-based way to do that yet, and there should be.
Any comments, questions, concerns about us including these as recommendations for use case tracking? Hans?
Yeah, not a concern overall, but perhaps that we could add some wording that it's not only about downloading DICOM, but that it's also about referencing DICOM, so that we don't need to send everything over the wire always.
Yeah, it's about image view and download and
sharing.
So thank you. That's right.
Yeah,
view, download, and share. Consumer and diagnostic quality images.
Yep. I mean, the broad issue is that some of these more complex and technically I'll say different sources of data that the consumer has a right to access are not in the EHR, and therefore you need some way to transfer your authorization to the system that does manage it. And so I think that's the broad problem that for which they're good technical standards that just have to be profiled and documented and tracked.
How's that language?
I think it's good. I think we also need to say rather than DICOM, we want to, and other high quality images, we want to say both consumer and diagnostic quality. Because, you know, DICOM is a standard, but because it's DICOM does not mean that the image is diagnostic quality.
Well, that's why I said and other high quality images. Yeah. But yeah, I'll accept that. We don't need to specifically reference DICOM, although it clarifies for the technical audience the area that you're focused on is PAC systems.
How's that?
Yep. That's good.
Anything on 23? There was not a similar reference for this one, correct, David?
I wasn't able to find it. There is an HL7 genomics work group that it has been developing fire extensions to handle VCFs. So they probably have notions about how to do this, but I wasn't aware of it, and my source wasn't either.
All right. Our time is tight. We actually, Clem had an item that he is not here to represent, but I think it's pretty straightforward. This was down toward the bottom, number 25, that you got it, thank you, where Clem suggested that ONC develop and support the implementation of a methodology to assess and monitor the actual delivery of standard codes in real-world laboratory messages. We made a lot of recommendations about how this should be done, and Clem's point here is that this should then be monitored and incentivized. This seems to me like a supplement to some of the earlier recommendations we discussed. Curious whether people are comfortable with this, since Clem's not here to represent it.
You're missing an of their implementation of a methodology.
Thank you. Yeah, I was trying to improve on Clem's language as best I could. Any concerns? Does anybody feel uncomfortable adding this to our list of recommendations?
No, and this would go, Stephen, in our extracurricular or our curricular adjacent recommendations.
Yes, indeed. We will definitely be separating these out. But,
separating it completely differently, or still in context of related areas? Because this,
we would jump this into our curriculum adjacent recommendations to labs.
So yeah, that is to say, it would go with the other lab recommendations.
Got it. Yep.
So David McCallie, your hands up.
Yeah, just I'm surprised that if Clem wrote this, that the word transparency didn't enter into his recommendation, because I thought that was his key point, is allow people to assess. I mean, maybe it's covered in a methodology to assess and monitor. Maybe that's the transparency, although it's not kind of how I think of transparency. I don't know.
I'm tracking the through line on Clem comments here. It is, hey, we think that LOINC transmittal is getting better, but we don't have any mechanisms right now to track the real world adoption of laboratory codes in practice that would give us sort of the instrument flight deck for how we're doing on LOINC standardization.
Right. And Dr. Luce shared with me a recent study just out in Jamia, you know, assessing the accuracy of mapping, and I think 40% were inaccurately mapped. And so there's a problem not only with, I mean, that I think we discussed it at great length that, you know, in some cases the data is not being made available, and in some cases it's being mismapped. And Clem's suggestion to that was transparency, but I suspect that's what he means by methodology to assess and monitor. So since he's not here to change the words, let's just live with what he suggested.
All right. Let's pause there and cut to public comment. I don't see any hands up, but let's go through the verbal here. ONC, you want to take us there?
Sure thing. Thanks, Stephen. We're going to now open up our meeting to public comments. If you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function at the bottom of your screen on the Zoom toolbar. If you're on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press star 6 to mute or unmute your line. We'll pause and keep watch to see if anyone raises their hand.
And I'll just acknowledge the people who join us from the public are really doing a great service in watching over this work and contributing as you do. I recognize most of the names in the list. So thank you all for coming. All right. If we have no public comments, let's just return to item 25, Clem's. So David, I think at the end there, you were saying that you felt comfortable with the language as it is in the spreadsheet at the moment. Did anyone have any concerns about that?
No. Hey, Stephen, I just want to raise a process question that I think we're going to talk about in just a bit in our offline chat, but you know, I think we're pretty close to being able to need to work off of the recommendations transmittal itself as opposed to the spreadsheet. Yes. So this is really by way of a call to all of the work group members to look at anything that is not in purple. And if you feel very strongly that it needs to be in the transmittal, please work with us offline. We will in next week's meeting do the transition to primarily work off of the transmittal, but also review a parsimonious set of items in the spreadsheet that want to be in the transmittal. So this is really last call comments.
Thank you, Arian. I think we have a moment to return to item 10 and see if that is going to be dropped or kept or modified. I took that out of order previously. It was the last thing we were going to try to cover today. And if we can display item 10, that would be awesome. But this was, again, public health interoperability. Now there is a listing for the updating the ISA to identify and specify the minimum data elements, APIs, and other standards and implementation guides to support use cases related to data exchange between public health and other stakeholders.
So this is by way of in our can we look at our other maybe offline we can look at our other recommendation about the priority use case page.
So maybe that's enough there.
Maybe that's enough.
Okay. And then the other one had to do with exploring the development of a certification program, and maybe that's too much. So anybody want to speak for or against us having recommendations? It sounds like we're talking about dropping this one.
This is Steve. I think there would be maybe not necessarily in terms of looking at a certification piece, but maybe we can charge with better ways of looking at confirming and in production environments, working on those data quality issues that we identified as being potentially the problem, and then figuring out what potential solutions are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in reality, there's so many people working on this right now and thinking through the challenges and opportunities. And unless our work group, you know, has something novel to recommend into that dialogue, I'm not sure it's worth us adding this to our recommendations. Abby, did you have something you were wanting to say?
Well, I don't know. I think it's a really... I mean, I think it's just a really important thing. I mean, without some sort of certification process, you know, we're drowning in the lack of standardization and mapping issues. But what I'm hearing you say is it's being worked on and that you think it's going to happen. And if we think it's going to happen, then I can live with taking this off. Otherwise, it's really important from our standpoint.
Yeah. So I'm looking at recommendation number 18, which calls for the use case section to be expanded. And then we reference in a bullet somewhere down the term disaster preparedness and pandemic response. I think what we should do is add the words public health, comma, disaster preparedness, comma, and pandemic response.
I just think it's a little bit different than that, but
I agree with you. I think listing standards is insufficient for ensuring that standards right. are adopted and used and that right. public health is funded to adopt standards. I think Stephen's point, there's a lot of work that's going on in this area. And so it's probably best for us to, in this area, confine our comments to the ISA.
All right. And we are over time. Mark, you're going to have the last word.
I'm sort of in the same space that Abby is, that this is important. And even just adding our imprimatur to certification in order to have some sort of structure across the ecosystem, I think is a small but worthy add.
So exploring the development of a certification program doesn't seem like too big an ask. We got more hands up and we're over time. Christina?
I just put mine in the chat.
Yep.
If you're going to say, this is Steve, if you're going to say certification, there's got to be funding attached to it because otherwise we can't get very far.
Okay, we will take all of this under advisement as we craft our transmittal. We will, I'm not sure what we're doing with number 10. We'll talk about that in our next meeting, Arianne. Thank you, everyone. Apologize for going a couple of minutes over. And Christina will look at the bullet that we modified with public health below. Thank you.